Howdy, folks, and welcome to A Green Way Forward. I'm your host, David Cobb. This is the program where we talk about issues and events, but specifically through the lens of the Green Party's principles and values of peace, justice, democracy, and ecology. This week's episode is Open Lines. That means we're going to talk about whatever you want to talk about. So if you are watching us live on the Face Stream, feel free to drop a comment or question directly in. Executive producer Michael O'Neill will be harvesting those and will feeding them to me. Of course, if you're listening on a podcast, we want to thank you for joining us through that medium and want to remind everyone with a hat tip to Gil Scott-Heron, although the revolution may not be televised, it can be brought to you over sources of non-corporately filtered news, information, and analysis. If this is your first time on this program, either through the podcast or the Facebook live stream, know that you can go to the website, agreenwayforward.org, sign up so you can know about upcoming guests. We had Chase Iron Eyes of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation on our last show. And we'll have other guests and frequently do have other guests. But on this show, we're going to talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about. Joe writes in immediately to ask, is the ideology of the Green Party in line with capitalism or socialism? From my perspective, Joe, this is an easy question. The answer is socialism. Remember that socialism really simply means the economic or really just means economic democracy or the democratic control of economic decision-making. Capitalism means that the industry are controlled by private hands and that they are organized and run for profit where they exploit both commodities and human labor for profit. That's really the definition of it. So there's no doubt that from my perspective, the question is the Green Party aligned with capitalism or socialism? The answer is socialism. Now, it is important to recognize that some people have a misunderstanding and think that socialism simply means a level of totalitarianism and unaccountable government control. That's a result of the long simmering McCarthyism and anti-communist scare that the right wing put forward. But if you go to the National Green Party's website, you'll see that we have actually adopted an eco-socialist perspective that talks about the democratic local control of economic decision-making. And I'm very proud of that position. And in no way, shape, or forward am I going to retreat from that personally. Aaron writes in to says, I want to talk about alternatives to Facebook and Twitter because they are censoring people like us. Aaron, I'm with you. And if you've got any suggestions on how to actually create alternatives to social media, please write into the comments. We would love to know what they are. I am not an expert in this field, but I have looked around and frankly, I haven't been able to find any alternatives that has the level of reach that Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram or Snapchat or any of the other corporate mechanisms have. Jacqueline writes in to ask, is Green Party promoting ranked choice voting nationwide? Great work in Maine. Jacqueline, thank you so much for that. The short answer is absolutely yes. The Green Party has been promoting both ranked choice voting and proportional representation as alternatives to the winner-take-all, first-past-the-post election system that was forced upon us and is in use in virtually all races across the country. Everywhere where there has been advancement on either ranked choice voting or proportional representation in the U.S., you will find Greens in the trenches working hard on it. And in Maine, the Green Party was a central part of that effort. It also is worth pointing out that a large number of other environmental groups, social justice groups, peace groups, and other constituencies actually came together, including progressive Democrats, and gives me the opportunity to remind folks that rank and file members of the Democratic Party are infinitely more progressive than the corporate leadership of the Democratic Party. In Maine, the leadership of the Maine Democratic Party fought tooth and nail, actually went to court to prevent the adoption of ranked choice voting, and advocates there literally went through a second round of citizens initiative petitioning to put it on the ballot and win a second time. So kudos to the main Green Party, but also to the genuine progressive constituency of organizations that came together to actually win ranked choice voting in Maine. Alan writes in to ask, could the Green Party help to organize an international industrial strategy adopting the 17 global goals of sustainable development for 2030? Alan, maybe, and I will confess my ignorance, I am not aware of what the 17 global goals for sustainable development is. I will look it up, and I just thank you for bringing that to my and our attention. I'll ask executive producer Michael O'Neill if he has any knowledge about the 17 global goals for sustainable development for 2030. If so, he can weigh in a little bit later in this program. But at this point, I am ignorant of it, but I promise you I will look into it. Sandy writes in to say, we need a special on beating the social media algorithms, especially for Facebook. Again, Sandy, I'm with you on that. It is very clear that the Facebook algorithms are being used to force people to pay for advertising and marketing on their corporate platform. You know, there was a time when this very program would routinely get 10, 20, 30,000 unique views. Our reach was in the hundreds of thousands. We never paid for any ads. It was what they call organic reach. Now I do know that this program gets typically between 5,000 and 7,000 views. We suspect that it's because the algorithms have been changed to make it more difficult, although we don't know. I also know on my personal Facebook page that I tend to see the same people over and over again. And I see that there are some techniques that folks are trying to utilize to change it. But the problem, Sandy, is that we don't know what those algorithms are. So it's very hard to figure out ways to beat them back. But I definitely agree with you and the prior commenter, Aaron, who talked about the need for our own alternatives to using social media. And failing that, I agree that we need to find other ways to actually use these tools in a more effective way. Lou writes in to say, I'm concerned about election integrity. Here in Detroit, our corrupt city clerks have been running roughshod over elections for decades. Lou, I share that concern. As you and many viewers of Greenway Forward probably know, I was the Green Party nominee for president in 2004, where I called for a recount in Ohio and New Mexico and Nevada in that election cycle because of the outrageous anecdotal evidence that came pouring in for the number of, quote, glitches in computer systems. Then whenever we looked a little further, we saw that there was a wholesale example of the fact that our elections are in absolutely atrocious shape. And corporations are owning the software. They're owning the vote counting mechanism. In addition to that, you have partisan office holders who actually administer elections. It is absolutely outrageous. I'm very proud of not only the Cabo 4 recount, but Jill Stein's efforts at recounts in both Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin in this election cycle. As many of you probably know, we even have litigation ongoing in both Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, we may for the first time ever have an opportunity to have experts actually examine the software code. So Lou, we in the Green Party continue to fight for election integrity. It is absolutely clear that we do not have elections that we can trust. And we've got to fight on that front, just as we have to fight the anti-imperialism of foreign policy, just as we have to fight for racial and social justice. The reality is that we are going to have to transform the entire society. Social, political, and economic institutions have got to actually be restructured. And how we cast and count our ballots is one of those issues. Ellen writes in to ask, what's your take on John McCain's passing? Ellen, I thank you for the question. I want to start by saying cancer is a horrific disease. It's a political disease, of course, caused by the amounts of toxins and poisons that industrial society pours in to our air, water, and soil on a continuous basis. And I would never make light of, make a joke about, or do anything other than offer my condolences to anybody who has lost a loved one or family member to cancer. So I am not going to dance on John McCain's grave. Neither am I going to participate in the sanitization of the political policies of Senator John McCain, who was in effect a corporatist, imperialist, right-wing ideologue of the worst order. And I actually think it's pretty atrocious that we are seeing a level of, I don't know how to describe it. Sanitization is the kindest way. But when a progressive darling Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez writes, quote, "John McCain's legacy represents an unparalleled example of human decency and American service. As an intern, I learned a lot about the power of humanity in government through his deep friendship with Senator Kennedy. He meant so much to so many." That's from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Twitter feed. I realize that we have gone into the twilight zone. This is an effort on her part. Look, again, it is completely appropriate to offer sympathies to the family of John McCain for his death. I'm not going to celebrate anyone's death. Neither am I going to call John McCain's legacy an unparalleled example of human decency and American service. The reality is that John McCain's voting record is absolutely horrific, from his refusal to support Martin Luther King Jr. Day as a national holiday, to his long-standing animus to black and brown people, but most importantly, through his support of the military-industrial complex and the U.S. foreign policy of empire. John McCain was a consistent imperialist. And so I think that we actually, because his death and his entire life is being framed around his politics, we should actually talk about his politics. And his politics were reprehensible. His politics were part of the entire problem. And the fact that we are seeing Democratic and Republican Party leadership come together to support and praise him simply because he has died is an example of the problem. So I thank you, Ellen, for that comment or that question. And repeat, I am not dancing on his grave, and I do offer sympathies to both John McCain's family and everyone who has died from cancer. And at the same time, will add my voice to the chorus of progressives who were reminding us about what John McCain's policies were actually like. Austin writes in to say, "Hi, my name is Austin Bashur, and I'm running for Ohio 75 as a Green. I'm a 21-year-old college student, and I'm ready to fight. I don't want politicians who will die in 20 years or die while in office to ruin the list of our lives. Our future is within our hands." Well, Austin, I say, first of all, thank you for running for office. Thank you for running as a Green. It's exciting to me anytime that we see young people who are running. And I do want to give a hat tip to the Ohio Greens. You Buckeyes are running an impressive slate of candidates, and I'm looking forward to the results. I also will take this opportunity to not only thank everybody who's running for office, for partisan office, but also to remind you that in most states, in most jurisdictions, Greens can also run in nonpartisan races for school board, for water board, for soil and conservation district, for in some cases, city council and county supervisor. In California, for example, those are nonpartisan races. And those are races where Greens can win. In fact, the most recent statistics that I saw showed that the Green Party wins about 40% of the nonpartisan races that we enter into. That number for re-election of incumbents goes up even higher. So thank you, Austin, for running. And I want to remind you and everyone else that nonpartisan races are also something that we should be looking into. Eric writes in to ask, why do people think that superdelegates matter? The DNC is a corporation and can legally choose their candidates. Well, you know, Eric, you're right about that. The DNC fraud lawsuit was really telling to actually show that the Democratic National Committee can actually choose its own rules and can violate those rules should they so desire. So the folks who are bending over backwards to applaud the fact that there was, a minor change to the DNC's process for the 2020 presidential election, I, like you, don't really understand why everyone is lauding this as if it's been some huge systemic change. Before we even get to what the change is, let's remember the DNC still has the authority and the right to unilaterally decide to change its mind and not even follow its own rules. That's what the DNC fraud lawsuit already showed. But now let's go even deeper, Eric, and take a look. And what we'll see is all the DNC agreed to do, superdelegates still exist. Superdelegates still have tremendous power in terms of setting policy and platform and calendaring of all events. The one restriction that was made, at least according to the rules that may or may not be followed, is on the first ballot, superdelegates cannot cast a vote. That's it. That's the only substantive change that they made. And the fact that so many folks who are pursuing a Dem enter strategy are lauding this as if it's some sort of victory, I think it's really, frankly, it is mind-boggling to me that anybody can call that a victory. The reality is that most states still use winner-take-all instead of proportional representation for allocating delegates. They still have superdelegates. They still allow superdelegates tremendous control over that party. And the most important thing from my perspective, Eric, take a look at what happened just 10 days ago when the Democratic National Committee, with the superdelegates voting, chose to reverse itself and agree to solicit and accept money from fossil fuel corporations. They tried to wrap it in some sort of language around, oh, well, we're a big tent party. But if you really want to see what is actually happening at the Democratic National Committee and within the corporatist, imperialist Democratic Party, all you have to do is look at where the money is coming from and the decisions that they make there. Anna asks, can the Greens recruit Bernie for 2020? Anna, the short answer is any Green can try to get any individual to seek the Green Party's nomination in 2020. The reality is that Bernie Sanders would have to seek the Green Party's nomination. I have no doubt that there are many Greens that would welcome that and would get very excited about it. I personally would not. I would like to actually see the Green Party seek a person of color, perhaps an indigenous person that actually shares our core values. But Anna, if you or anybody else wants to try to recruit Bernie to seek the Green Party's nomination, you have every right to do so. The Green Party has a very transparent process. Just go to the website, www.gp.org, and you can find our presidential candidate campaign support committee and talk with folks there. But at this point, Bernie Sanders or any other individual, whether it was Cornel West or Chase Iron Eyes or Jill Stein or you, would have to actually start to seek the nomination. Remember, it's not a question of us recruiting anybody. We have a presidential nominating process, and a candidate has to seek our nomination, and that's how the process works. So Douglas writes in to ask, where does the Green Party stand regarding MMT, our modern monetary theory? The Green Party has an explicit and unambiguous platform position that supports the American Monetary Institute's policy and proposal. There was or is, I think, now an effort to change that and to adopt MMT. It is my understanding that that failed, but I could be wrong. I will look into that, or also ask Michael O'Neill if he knows the result of that debate or if that vote came up. But at this point, I can tell you that there are some Green Party candidates who are absolutely supporting MMT. There are other candidates who are supporting the positive money approach of the American Monetary Institute. From my perspective, I think they both sort of missed the point that unless and until we actually change the economic system known as capitalism, the democratic control of the money system cannot exist within a capitalist monetary system. So that's my own personal position. Tim writes in to ask, how do you feel about universal basic income? We can clearly see we are pushing into poverty and control by those who are untouchable to their crimes. So, Tim, I agree with you. I am a huge supporter of universal basic income. I think that there is no doubt that we're going to see some version of it. But again, from my perspective, I would like to restructure the entire economic system. I actually would like to see us move into an eco-socialist economic system where we institute a genuine Green New Deal, as Jill Stein in 2016 articulated, as Green Party governor candidate Howie Hawkins articulates in that state. And all you have to do is go to either Howie Hawkins or Jill Stein's websites and do an internet search on the Green New Deal and or universal basic income, and that will come up. Pete writes in to wonder what fashion advice you have for Green Party candidates so they look credible for the office they are running in. You know, Pete, I appreciate that question. One thing that has always caused me heartache is when I see Greens in Birkenstock sandals and tie-dyes at our national conference. That's almost always what the corporate media ends up plastering. I myself always wear a sports coat and a button-down shirt when I am going in to public places to represent the Green Party. I do not change one iota my unambiguous radical revolutionary position on issues, but I definitely believe that it's a good idea to dress in such a way that folks cannot easily discount us or marginalize us. And I do wish that more Green Party candidates would actually take that seriously. Halicia writes in to say, we must fight for hand-counted paper ballots. Completely agree with that, Halicia. And I'm happy to say that that's actually the formal position of the National Green Party platform, as well as the position that Jill Stein took, Cynthia McKinney took, I took, Ralph Nader took in 2000. So it has been a consistent presidential campaign position as well as the platform position of the National Green Party. James writes in to say, let us now praise famous bigot warmongers. Again, James, you know, I appreciate that sentiment. As I say, I'm certainly not going to dance on anyone's grave, and I am going to have enormous sympathy for the family members who have lost a loved one. However, John McCain was, in fact, a bigoted imperialist, and his policies and his voting record reflect that. And I will continue to indict that voting record, but I will not engage in any of the glee that I have seen from some of the progressive circles about his death. I just don't think that that's a good process. We are actually are getting a note that we're not sure if the Modern Monetary Theory Amendment actually went through. So if anybody who's actually watching has information on that, if you'd share it with us, we would be very grateful. And I do think that it's probably time to have another debate on monetary theory on this policy. I think it is an important debate to be had. I can tell you, though, again, from my perspective, I think that MMT and the idea of just being able to print money only works if you're actually the capital of empire. That's the reason that I don't think that it's actually the solution that others do. Catherine writes in to ask, thanks for the Q&A session. These are always informative. How do you deal with the heat when wearing a sports coat or blazer? Well, that's a great question, Catherine. I can tell you that If it is really blazing hot on the outside, then I would not recommend a sports coat or a blazer, but a button-down shirt, especially a cotton button-down shirt, is just as comfortable as a t-shirt. And in addition to that, linen, and there are plenty of fabrics, sports coats that can be worn in the summertime that are usually not oppressively hot. But your point is a good one, and that is people should be comfortable and people should be authentic. Again, the point that I was making, and I think that Pete was making earlier with his comment, is that as Greens, we are already suffering from so many structural barriers of this two-party system, from access having to fight to even get on the ballot or get into the debates, from a horrific voting system that forces people to vote against what they hate rather than for what they want, a corporatized campaign finance system, that the one thing that one of the things that we can control is how we present ourselves. And I don't think it's a good idea to self-marginalize ourselves by dressing down. I think that we should dress up for the office. Christine writes in to ask, what are the steps to shift away from capitalism to socialism? What a great question, Christine. And I would, I promise you, Michael and I are going to do a whole program on this very topic. But in a nutshell, I would say this. We have to start creating new institutions that actually meet our needs in a cooperative fashion. That means housing co-ops. That means supporting public banking. That means community-supported agriculture. That means little free pantries. That means a whole host of existing policies that can be enacted at the local level to begin to shift away. And the other thing, note this, most of these don't even require governmental engagement. I believe the Green Party should get more explicit and clear about, in between elections, creating new organizations that help to facilitate mutual aid and start to create cooperative economic ventures, cooperative housing ventures, cooperative education, cooperative childcare. I think that the way we start to shift is that you create the new society within the shell of the old. As a Green, I obviously involve myself in elections, but I wish that Greens would do cooperative economics in between elections. And I promise we're going to do a whole program on that very soon. Jamie writes in to ask, I just want to take a moment to express my gratitude for all our Greens in the struggle every day doing the work that needs to be done. You are beautiful. Jamie, thank you so much for that. I often say I wish that the left in general and the Green Party specifically would spend a little more time thanking each other, expressing gratitude, and saying, way to go, or atta boy, or atta girl, or way to go, you non-binary, non-gender-conforming person who we love just as much as we do everyone else. But the fact is, showing appreciation, inspiration, goes a long way to helping people continue the perspiration of the job. And I really think that the Green Party needs to be doing more of that. And I want to thank you for doing that on this program, and you really bring us to a wonderful place to end this particular program of A Green Way Forward. I want to remind all of you who are watching us on Facebook, whether it's live or watching it later, please share this on your own personal pages and any other page that you manage so that we can continue to reach out. If you're listening to us on a podcast, please forward this podcast to other people in your contacts so that we can continue to grow our audience. And lastly, each and every one of you, I ask you, please go to the website, agreenwayforward.org, and sign up so that we can continue to build the audience for this mechanism. Lastly, thank you to Michael O'Neill, the executive producer of A Green Way Forward, for all the work that you do as an unpaid volunteer to keep this program going. Peace.
Yeah.